Ux, because knowing Luke, he's set it up so that he'll be notified as soon as my monitor indicates I've left my house or that the monitor has been tampered with in any way. There's no way I could make it from here to their place without them being given plenty of advance warning. And yes, I could send someone to their apartment to do my work for me, but where's the fun in that? Where's the fun in watching a bullet stop Luke's heart when I'm not standing in front of him, smelling the gunpowder? Where's the fun in making Sloane realize what a pathetic life choice she's made when I'm not the one tasting her tears when she cries for mercy? It's a good thing I'm a big planner. I plan everything. I look at all possible scenarios, and I develop ways around them before the events even occur. Because I'm a motherfucking genius. Just like good old Grandpa. I remember when I was a kid, there was a moment I thought I was going to die. I had slipped into my mother's bedroom and had stolen some pills from her. Fuck, I was so little I couldn't even read yet. I had no idea what I was taking. I just knew I wanted to feel whatever she felt. I wanted to chase whatever feeling it was that she loved more than her own child. I woke up a few hours after I had taken them, and my ankles looked like fucking baseballs. Both my legs were swollen. Back then, I thought it was because I was dying, and all my blood was pooling in my feet. But now I know it was because of the medication. Antidepressants. Pain pills, calcium channel blockers. They all cause severe edema, which was what I was experiencing as a kid. I just didn't realize it then. Pansy Paul told me there was a chance I might get house arrest while we waited for the trial. Most defendants in my situation would be offered some sort of bail so they could walk around free. But with my record, he was almost certain I'd be confined to my house until a verdict was reached at trial. That's one of the few things I'm grateful to Pansy Paul for. The forewarning. It gave me a good solid week to obtain and consume as many pills as possible to guarantee a good couple of inches on each ankle. Wasn't hard to do, since I was already in a hospital thanks to those two fuckers who thought it'd be a good idea to actually shoot me. Pricks. Since the ankle monitor was attached, I've had to keep up with the medications, just so the follow-up visits from the probation officer wouldn't raise any red flags. Stupid fucker has never even thought twice about the fact that my ankles and calves are the size of tree trunks. His name is Stuart. Who in real life is really named Stuart? Stuart thinks I'm just big-boned. I rejoice in his stupidity with every visit. I also kind of like the guy, because he feels bad for me. He thinks I'm a good guy, because I laugh at his lame jokes and I talk to him about Jesus. Stuart fucking loves Jesus. I even had Anthony bring me a crucifix. Before Stuart's visit this morning, I hung it on my living room wall above the flat-screen TV where I watch hours upon hours of porn. Ironic, huh? When Stuart saw the Jesus on a stick, he commented on it. I told him it was my grandpa's. I told him he was a Baptist preacher, and it helps to look at that crucifix and know that Grandpa is looking down on me. It's a lie, of course. I doubt my grandpa ever even stepped foot inside a church. And if he really did own a crucifix, he probably used it to beat people with. Stuart liked it, though. Said he has one almost identical to it, but it's not quite as big. He also checked my ankle monitor and told me everything looked great and that he'd see me in a week. I gave him a slice of coconut cake before he left. Now I'm standing here, staring down at the bottle of hydrochlorothiazide in my hands. I have to be smart with it, because taking too much could drop my blood pressure like a motherfucker. But I need to take enough to get rid of the edema. Enough to create a large enough gap between me and my ankle monitor so that I can slip it off and onto Anthony's wrist. That's where the genius comes in. If a person could actually slip an ankle monitor off without tampering with the fiber optics, the chances of it picking that up are slim to none. Ankle monitors are monitored periodically throughout the day, set up on timers and shit. So the switch from my foot to Anthony's wrist will go completely unnoticed, so long as the actual piece of equipment isn't tampered with. They thought ankle monitors were foolproof, because they don't slip off the ankles of people of average intelligence. It's the geniuses like me they should have been more concerned with. Now I just have to be able to trust Anthony enough not to leave my fucking house or drink any alcohol until I tell him it's done. Then I'll put the ankle monitor back on my ankle, and it'll look like I never left the house. In the meantime, I still have more planning to do. I open the bottle and pop 4 of the pills. I open my laptop and begin searching obstetricians while I place phone calls for 2 hours straight. By the time I finally figure out which obstetrician Sloane is seeing, I've already pissed 4 times. The ankle monitor is starting to feel loose. I was thinking this would take a few days, but I think this can actually happen as soon as tomorrow morning. The person who answers the phone puts me on hold while she searches the file for what I'm assuming is a confidentiality agreement. HIPAA compliance, and all that shit. "Sir?" she asks, to see if I'm still on the line. "Here," I tell her.
"What did you say your name was?"
"Luke," I tell her. "I'm the father."
"Ha!"
I laugh internally at all the Star Wars jokes that poor fucker must have endured in his lifetime.
"Can you confirm your address and date of birth?" she asks.
I confirm both of them, because I know both of them, because I'm a genius. Once my identity is confirmed, she says,
"And what is it you were wanting to know?"
"The due date. I'm having a video made for our family to announce the pregnancy, and I don't want to ask Sloane because she'll get mad that I forgot the exact due date. So I'm hoping you can just share that information with me to keep me out of the doghouse." The woman laughs. She likes that I'm such a loving and caring man, excited about the birth of my child.
"Looks like the conception occurred in March. Due date is Christmas Day. Not sure how you could forget that, Dad," she says with a laugh.
I laugh, too.
"That's right. Christmas Day. Our very own little miracle. Thanks for checking."
"No problem." I hang up the phone and look at a calendar. Sloane was still living with me in March. Luke was around in March. A whole fucking lot. I'm not sure when the brainwashing started, or when she gave herself to him. My whole body stiffens at the thought. I can't believe he fucked her. My Sloane. I can't believe she let him. I have no idea if they even used a condom. I stand up, filled with renewed rage. I pick the chair up I was just sitting in and I throw it across the room, watching it smash against the door. I sprint across the living room and pull the fucking crucifix off the wall. I bash it against the TV, cracking the screen. That feels good. Sloane was with me when I bought that TV. I look for something else to smash. A mirror. I run toward it and slam the crucifix against it 3 times until all the glass is shattered on the floor. I take my crucifix down the hallway to the bathroom. I stare at myself in the mirror, wondering if that baby inside her is mine. Just knowing there's a chance it could come out looking like Luke makes me fucking hate it. I swing the crucifix at the mirror and smash it over and over. Fucking bitch. I walk upstairs and do the same to that mirror. I don't even want this fucking baby. It's been inside her since March, and there's no telling how many times Luke has been inside her since then. Even if it is my baby, he's already tainted it. When Sloane grows my baby inside her, Luke won't be around to corrupt my child. I walk through every room, finding more things my tiny Jesus on a stick can destroy. Lamps? Done. Vases? Smashed. Jesus on a stick is on a rampage. Fucking bitch. Fucking baby. Fucking Luke. Every nice thing I've ever had in my life has been destroyed by that man. My empire. The love of my life. My potential child. Everything that's ever meant anything to me now means absolutely nothing to me because of him. When I make it back to the kitchen, I open the bottle and swallow another pill. The sooner I'm able to get this ankle monitor off, the sooner I can destroy what he's slowly corrupting. I'll be a dad when I'm goddamn ready to be a dad. And it'll be to a child who isn't a single goddamn part of that pathetic piece of shit. This thing growing inside Sloane right now wasn't made from love. Even if it's mine, it wasn't created innocently. She was allowing another man to corrupt her while I was making love to her at night. If I'd have known that, my dick would have never been inside her. I would have ended her before she went and made all the stupid decisions she's made. Now I just need to put a stop to it. I look at the screensaver on my laptop. It's a screenshot of the moment she put her hands on her belly and smiled down at that abomination. I pull a new chair around and I sit down and change my screensaver. I find a picture of Sloane from back when she was sweet. I make it my screensaver and I stare at it, wondering how she let this happen. How does she still have the audacity to smile when the whore doesn't even know whose baby is inside her? Fucking whore. I look down at the crucifix in my hand. Jesus on a stick, do you want to go on a little road trip with me tomorrow? I know a girl who has some serious repenting to do.
53. Sloane. In the last 2 weeks, I've cooked and photographed 27 meals. Maybe it's because I'm trying to keep my mind off the fact that I can't leave my apartment, but this cookbook idea has completely taken over my thoughts. When I'm not thinking about the pregnancy, of course, which is every other moment. I don't know what I'd do without Luke. Part of me thinks he's too good to be true, that men like him don't really exist, and that this is all some sort of wishful thinking on my part. I live in constant fear that he was only brought into my life so I would have to endure the pain of him being taken out of it. I hate those thoughts, and I try not to think them, but I do. Constantly. I fear losing him more than I fear death. But every afternoon, when Luke comes home and wraps me in his arms and asks how we're doing, it completely reinforces his claim that this baby is his. No matter who is biologically responsible for the conception, Luke loves it, simply because it's inside me. That's enough for him. And somehow, he makes me think it's enough for me. When I'm actually in Luke's presence, I feel a sense of self-worth. I feel all the things that Asa stripped from me. I don't know if I'm as good at forgiveness as Luke seems to be. He didn't even make me feel ashamed. Not even for a second. And he continues to remind me of how lucky he is, even though I know it's the other way around. He always redirects my thoughts when I start to worry about Asa finding out about the pregnancy or when I worry about the upcoming trial. But when he's not here, like right now, the only thing that can redirect my thoughts is this cookbook. I'm making lasagna tonight. I'm not sticking to a certain type of food. I'm including all of my favorite foods. I'm even including some of Asa's favorites, like his damn coconut cake. I like that his favorite recipes are going in a cookbook that goes against everything he is as a person. It feels a little like revenge. For every $2 this cookbook makes, it's a dollar that helps women who have suffered at the hands of men like Asa. So, yes, I'm including his stupid fucking coconut cake and his stupid spaghetti and meatballs and even his stupid protein shake that he used to wake me at all hours of the night to make for him. As much as I hate all the times he demanded I cook for him, at least some good will come of it. This whole cookbook feels like a huge middle finger to Asa Jackson. That's a good idea, actually. I think I'll incorporate a tiny little hand flipping the bird on all the pages somehow. A cute little middle finger emoji. When I finish layering the noodles and sauce, I set the pan up to take another picture. I snap a few and then place the pan in the oven.
What smells so good?
I grip the counter at the sound of his voice. Right behind me. No. No, no, no. It isn't possible. The door is still deadbolted. All the windows are locked from the inside. I'm dreaming. I'm dreaming. I'm dreaming. I can feel myself slowly sinking to the kitchen floor as my body starts to fail me. I'm going into shock. I can feel it. I can feel it. No, no, no. I'm on the floor. I slide my hands through my hair and against my ears, my palms shaking. I try to cover up the sound of his voice. If I don't hear it, it's not there. He's not there. He's not.
Jesus, Sloane.
He's closer now.
I thought you'd be a little more excited to see me.
I squeeze my eyes shut, but I can hear him as he hoists himself up onto the counter next to me. I open my eyes and see his feet swinging close to the floor as his legs dangle at my side. There's no ankle monitor. He wants me to see that. I know how his fucked up mind works. How is this happening? Where is my phone? I feel sick. I force myself to breathe so I don't pass out from fear.
Lasagna, huh?
He tosses something onto the counter.
Never liked your lasagna much. You always used too much tomato sauce.
I'm crying now. I scoot away from him, unable to find the strength to stand up. I keep scooting, knowing I won't get anywhere, but hoping I somehow do.
Where are you going, baby?
He asks. I try to pick myself up off the floor, but as soon as I come to a half stand, he jumps off the counter and has his arms around me from behind.
Let's go have a little chat,
he says, lifting me effortlessly off the floor. I cry out in fear, and a hand immediately clamps over my mouth.
I'm going to need you to be quiet while we chat,
he says, carrying me through the living room and into my bedroom. I still haven't laid eyes on him yet. I won't. I refuse to look at him. Luke, please, Luke, come home. Come home. Come home. Asa tosses me onto the bed, and I immediately begin to crawl to the other side, but he grips my ankle and yanks me back. I'm on my stomach. I try to kick his hand off. I grab at a blanket, a pillow, anything my hands can touch, but my strength does little to defend me against him. In what feels like slow motion, he flips me onto my back and pins my hands down with his knees as he straddles me. He's sitting on top of me, putting pressure against my stomach, and it's then that I know he knows. It's not something I can hide at this point. That's why he's here. I feel his fingers press against my eyelids, and he forces them open. When I see his face, he's smiling.
Hey, beautiful. He says, it's rude not to make eye contact with someone when they're trying to have a serious conversation with you.
He's fucking insane, and there's nothing I can do to protect myself, nothing I can do to protect my baby. Despite the fact that he has me pinned to the bed, completely at his mercy, I somehow still have lucid thoughts that flash through my head. Right now, in this second, I'm wondering how my life can mean so much to me. How the thought of dying fills me with so much fear, when just a few months ago, I honestly wouldn't have cared. I used to pray Asa would just kill me and put me out of my misery. That was back when I had nothing to live for. Now, I have everything to live for. Everything. The tears fall from my eyes and into my hair. He looks at the tears sliding down my face, and then he leans forward, bringing his face to mine. He moves his mouth to my temple, and I feel his tongue as it draws up some of the tears. When he pulls back, his smile is gone.
I thought they would taste different,
he whispers. I start sobbing. My pulse has gotten so fast, it's one constant beat now. Or maybe it stopped altogether. I close my eyes again. Just get it over with, Asa, I whisper. Please. Some of the pressure on my stomach decreases, as if he's readjusting himself on top of me. Then I feel him lift my shirt and press a hand to my stomach.
Congratulations,
he says.
Is it mine?
I keep my eyes closed and refuse to respond to him. He rubs his hand over my stomach for several seconds. I feel him move closer again, and his mouth is at my ear.
Are you wondering how the fuck I got inside your apartment?
I was, but now I'm wondering how the fuck I can get him out.
Do you remember this morning when your good friend Luke let the maintenance man in to change the filter on the air conditioning?
The maintenance guy? What? No, that isn't possible. Luke asked for his identification, verified his identity with the manager. We know everyone who works on this property, and that man has worked here for over 2 years.
He did me a small favor and unlocked the window while Luke had his back turned. You know how much he did it for? $2,000. No questions asked. He knew you were here, he knew you were pregnant, and he knew I had something terrible planned, because why else would I pay him $2,000 to unlock a window? He didn't care, Sloan. $2,000 is all he needed, and then he walked away, no questions asked.
I'm sick. Sick. Humans are sick. If that man knew what Asa was capable of, he never would have done that. He never would have unlocked the window. He probably thought Asa was breaking in to steal a TV. I might be crying even harder now, disappointed that humanity fails to live up to even the minimum morals.
Your little surveillance buddy out front never even saw me, because sadly, Luke doesn't think you're worth the money to hire surveillance for every point of entry into this apartment. Does he really think I'm stupid enough to go through the front fucking door?
The more he talks, the less I hear. Somehow my fear is numbing me. I can't feel my body anymore. I can't feel Asa on top of me. I can't hear my own voice when I say no over and over. I slowly stop feeling anything, if only to protect myself.
54. Asa. That felt different. I'm still panting, recovering from that unplanned moment between us. I collapse on top of her. It was better back when I knew I was the only one who had ever been inside her. Knowing Luke knows what it feels like to be a part of her made me want to put my hands around her throat and squeeze both lives out of her. I probably would have if she'd have put up a fight, but she didn't. She misses me. Any other woman in the world would have done whatever she could have to fight me off of her, but not Sloane. She knows that's where she belongs. Beneath me. Surrounding me. I lie next to her and prop myself up on my elbow. She still has her eyes closed. I hate that she's just as fucking beautiful as she was when she was innocent. That same shiny dark hair, long enough to cover her breasts. Those same sweet, soft lips that used to belong only to me and my body. I drag my finger down her stomach, over the tiny bump. I sigh as I look down at her. I fucking miss her. I hate her so fucking much, but I miss her. Look at me, Sloane. She does, slowly. She opens her tear-filled eyes and tilts her head just enough to make eye contact with me. I miss you, baby. I rub my hand over her stomach while I talk to her. I try to sound sweet. Maybe if she remembers how good we were together, we can somehow get back to that. Do you know how lonely it is in our house, Sloane? It's lonely without you there.
I hate it.
She closes her eyes again. I press a soft kiss against her lips.
I thought I was over you, I say, thinking back to yesterday. To the rage-filled rampage I went on with Jesus on a stick. I hated you, Sloane. But I don't like hating you, baby.
She sucks in a long rush of air, and my mouth is so close to hers, she steals some of my breath. I give her more. I press my mouth to hers, and I kiss her, filling her mouth with my tongue. She refuses to kiss me back.
Sloane, I whisper, dragging my lips across hers. Baby, I need you to kiss me back. I need to know if I still mean anything to you.
I remain patient, still touching her, watching her. She finally opens her eyes. And then she remembers. She lifts her head, parting her lips for me. She remembers how much I've done for her. She remembers how much I loved her. How hard I loved her. When her tongue slides against mine, I want to fucking cry.
Baby, I've missed you so much, I say to her.
But then I shut up, because she's kissing me like she used to kiss me before she was corrupted. She's kissing me the way she kissed me that first night in the alley, when my mouth was the first one to introduce her to a kiss. She's moving now, lifting her arms, rubbing her hands up my neck. I needed this so much. It was worth the risk of removing the ankle monitor. So worth it. I know I came here with different intentions, but that's because I was angry. Luke makes me feel so much hatred, it caused me to confuse what I feel for him with what I feel for Sloane. It made me think she was evil, but she's not. She's a victim. She's simply Luke's victim, and she just needed me to remind her of how different it feels to be held by me. She needed to feel me inside her, to remind her that she's being brainwashed to forget me. But she didn't forget me. She remembers.
Asa, she whispers, saying my name with desire. Asa, I'm sorry.
I pull back, shocked that I can even force words out when I need her so fucking much I can't even breathe.
It's okay, I say,
brushing the hair back from her face.
It's okay. We'll get past this.
He made you hate me, and for a moment he made me hate you. But that's not us, Sloane.
You don't hate me.
She shakes her head.
I don't, Asa. I don't hate you.
I can see the apology all over her face. I can feel the regret in her words and in the tears that are still falling. She forces a smile, but it's hard for her because this is so intense. Being reunited with her like this, feeling how much she misses me, it's the most intense feeling I've ever had. It almost makes the entire last few months all worth it.
This is heaven. This is God's apology.
I forgive you, I whisper, and I'm not sure if I'm forgiving Sloane or if I'm forgiving God. Maybe I'm forgiving both of them, because this is worth all the forgiveness in the world. Making up with her feels so fucking good, I might even consider forgiving Luke. Okay, that's not true. I'll never forgive that piece of shit. But I'll worry about him later. Right now, I'm preoccupied with the love of my life.
Don't leave me again, Sloane, I say, holding her against me.
I can't even describe this. I thought I loved her before, but it doesn't compare to this moment, to the intensity rushing through my veins. My heart beats for her. She's why my heart still beats at all. And I'm not sure I realized it to the extent I realize it now.
Don't ever fucking leave me again. If you break your promise, I don't know if I can be as forgiving.
Maybe this feels so different because I love more than just Sloane now. I love what's growing inside her. She's growing our child. which means there's so much more of her to love. There's her, and then there's the tiny little piece of heaven that we created together, growing inside her body. And fuck Luke. Luke wouldn't be capable of creating life that's due on Christmas fucking day. I know I created this baby with her, because I wouldn't feel this way if it were Luke's baby. This feeling is God, letting me know that a part of me is inside of Sloane, and that I need to do what I can to protect both of them from Luke. I move until I can press my cheek to Sloane's stomach. I lay my palm flat against her skin, and I squeeze my eyes shut, but the tears still come. I can't believe I'm crying right now. What the fuck? Does realizing you're a dad instantly turn men into pussies? I squeeze her tight, and I kiss my baby. I kiss her over and over. Her stomach is so beautiful, and I know the life we created together will be beautiful. Just like Sloane. She runs her hand through my hair.
You're gonna be a daddy, Asa.
Those words she just spoke are embedded into my soul. I laugh, and I keep fucking crying, and then I'm on top of her again, kissing her. I can't get enough of her. You're so beautiful, baby. You're so beautiful. If I knew how fucking beautiful being pregnant would make you, I would have tampered with your birth control way sooner than I did. I feel her freeze for a second, and it makes me laugh. I pull back and look down on her, but she gives me a half-hearted smile.
What?
She says. Her voice cracks a little. I laugh and kiss her again.
You can't be mad at me, Sloane.
I put a hand on her stomach again and look down on her.
I did it for us, so you wouldn't leave me.
For some reason, she's crying, but so am I. All good tears.
We've been through fucking hell, but look at us. We're having a baby.
I kiss her, and I leave my lips pressed lightly against hers.
You won't leave me again, Sloane. Not with my baby inside of you. Right?
She immediately shakes her head.
I won't, Asa.
I promise. I'll never leave you.
Say it again.
I'll never leave you.
Again.
I swear, I'll never leave you.
55. Sloane. There was a moment. It was a split second, almost too quick to notice. It was right when Asa looked down on me, begging me to kiss him back. It was a moment of desperation. I took advantage of it. I tell him what he needs to hear. I touch him like he needs to be touched. I make the noises I've trained myself to make for him. I speak the lies to him that I've trained myself to speak. I've been pretending to love him for 2 years. What's one more day? I'm going to fight Asa with the only weapon stronger than he is. I'm going to fight him with love. I repeat my words one more time. I promise I'll never leave you, Asa. Those words seem to comfort him, but I don't want him to get comfortable in this bedroom enough to think he can force himself on me again. I need to distract him with conversation, so I say, "What now?" I stroke his face with fingers I've somehow convinced to stop trembling. How do we get out of this mess? I can't lose you again. He grabs my hand and kisses it. We get dressed and walk out the front door, Sloane. Simple as that. And then we go somewhere. Anywhere. We get far away from here. I nod, taking in all that he just said. Asa is dumb as shit. But somehow he's also one of the smartest people I've ever met. I've always had to try to stay a step ahead of him. This is no different. Every move he makes from here on out is a test. I dissect his words and flip them over in my head. He knows we can't go out the front door. He knows about the surveillance. That's why he came through the window. He's testing my loyalty. I shake my head. Asa, You can't walk out the front door, I say, forcing myself to sound worried for him. Luke has me under surveillance. If whoever is out there sees me with you, they'll call Luke. Asa grins. It was a test. He leans forward and kisses me on the forehead. We'll go out the window then. I need to pack first. I start to get up, but he pulls me back down. I'll pack for you, he says. Don't get off this fucking bed. He stands up and looks around the room. I can see the veins in his neck bulging as he notices all of Luke's things. I try to distract him from his own anger. There's a bag in the top of the closet. I point toward the closet, and I see his eyes as they scan the distance from the bed to the living room. He walks toward the closet and slams the bedroom door shut as he passes, his way of letting me know that I better not even try to run. I take in my physical posture on the bed and realize that it looks like I'm poised to jump at any second. I'm not being convincing enough. I lie back on my pillow and try to look relaxed. He walks out of the closet and scans me, smirking. He likes that I didn't try to run. He's letting down his own guard. So fucking beautiful, love, he says, tossing the bag onto the bed. What do you want me to pack? He looks around the room. His eyes fall to the dresser, at the picture of me and Luke. I printed it out a week ago and framed it. I can see the roll in Asa's throat. Excuse me for a second, he says, walking toward the bedroom door. Where are you going? I ask, sitting up on the bed. He opens the door and walks into the living room.
I left Jesus on a stick near the window. I need him.
What in the hell? He's back before I can process what he said, and he's holding something in his hand. Is that a crucifix? What in the hell? He smiles with his nod, and then he brings the crucifix up over his head with both hands, and then straight down again, right on top of the framed picture on the dresser. I flinch with the first blow, but he bashes the cross against the frame over and over until it's in a dozen tiny pieces. I'm absolutely terrified, but I force myself to laugh. I don't know how. Every part of me wants to scream out in terror right now, but I know that's the last thing I need to do. I'm playing a part, and that character needs to laugh for Asa because he needs to know that I have no feelings for that picture frame. He glances at me and enjoys the smile on my face. He grins from ear to ear, so I point at the nightstand. There's one over there, too. His gaze falls on the other picture frame, and he glides across the room. He swings the crucifix like it's a bat, knocking the picture off the nightstand and straight into the wall. Even knowing it was coming, I still flinch. I cringe at the amount of hatred he has for Luke. This entire time, I've been silently praying that Luke will miraculously come home early, but now I'm praying he doesn't, because I'm not sure any man can withstand the person Asa is right now. He's completely irrational. He's void of compassion, of empathy. He's delusional. He's dangerous. And I'd rather get Asa out of this apartment and be forced to accompany him than have him here when Luke returns home. Asa looks around the room. When he doesn't see anything else that makes him vengeful, he tosses the crucifix on the bed.
When does Luke get home?
He knows when Luke gets home. I could lie and say he'll be home any minute. But if Asa somehow knew our address, then he more than likely already knows our every move. He knows Luke gets home at 6 every night. 6? I say to him. He nods. He pulls his phone out of his pocket and checks the time.
It's gonna be a long wait, he says. What do you want to do for the next few hours?
Wait. What? We're waiting for him. He drops down onto the bed next to me.
Of course we are, Sloane. I didn't come all this way to take back my girl and not get revenge on the bastard who stole her from me.
He somehow says all this with a smile on his face. Once again, I swallow my fear. We could eat lasagna. If I don't take it out of the oven in the next 2 minutes, it'll be inedible. Asa leans over me and presses a kiss to my mouth, making a loud pop when he pulls back.
Fucking genius, babe.
He scoots off the bed and pulls me up.
I'm starving.
He lets go of my hands and walks into the bathroom. He leaves the door open, and he watches me the whole time he stands over the toilet. I put my clothes back on, trying to stop my hands from shaking too noticeably. He flushes the toilet and walks back into the bedroom, toward the living room.
"I was just kidding earlier," he says. "I don't hate your lasagna."
I feel really bad for saying that. I was just really upset with you. "I know, baby. We all say things we don't mean when we're angry." I walk into the kitchen. The lasagna has been in the oven way longer than I intended for it to be, but I don't think it's burnt yet. It just won't make for very good pictures for the cookbook. I laugh as soon as I have that thought. Seriously? My life is in fucking danger, and I'm thinking about a stupid cookbook. I walk into the kitchen, but Asa isn't far behind me. I'm sure he's on my heels because he's not convinced I won't go for a knife. He's smart, because if he wasn't a step behind me, I'd absolutely go for one. I grab the empty boxes of ingredients strewn across the counter and toss them toward the trash, but as soon as I do, I see there's no trash bag lining the can. That's because I took the trash out of the can. I look at the trash bag, tied at the top, sitting next to the empty trash can. I look at the empty trash can. My pulse begins to race, and I do everything I can to hide it. I forgot the fucking trash. Calm down. Calm down. Calm down. I grab an oven mitt, and I pull the oven door open. I set the pan of lasagna down on top of the stove. Asa reaches over my shoulder and opens a cabinet to grab a couple of plates. He kisses the top of my head in the process. He grabs a spatula and cuts into the lasagna, refusing to bring a knife into the equation. The whole time he cuts at the lasagna, I'm staring at the empty trash can. I didn't take out the trash.
56. Luke. I look at my phone again. "You aren't listening," Ryan says, bringing my attention back to him. "I'm listening." I set my phone on the table face up. I stare at it and pretend to be listening to Ryan, but he's right. I'm not. "What the hell, Luke?" He snaps his fingers. "What's wrong with you?" I shake my head. "Nothing, it's just..." I don't even want to say it out loud because I'll sound like an idiot. The measures Sloane and I have gone to just to feel safe are ridiculous, even by my standards. "It's 5 after. Ryan leans back in his seat and takes a sip of his drink. We're at some pizza joint just a few miles from my apartment discussing what we always discuss when we meet. Asa's case. He goes to trial in a few short months, and I'll be damned if we don't do everything we can to make this as cut and dry as possible. The longer he's sentenced and the more he's convicted of, the better off Sloane will be. "It's 5 after what? Ryan asks. 12 o'clock. 6 after now. I look at my phone. It's 12:06 and Sloane hasn't taken out the trash yet. Ryan leans forward. "Please elaborate, because you're really starting to piss me off with how not present you've been in our conversation. That guy who does daytime surveillance, Thomas, he always texts me right at noon to let me know Sloane took the trash out. She puts it outside the door every day at noon so I'll know everything is okay." I pick up the phone and begin texting Thomas. "Why don't you just call and check up on her?" Ryan asks, as if that's the most obvious answer. "This is extra protection. If something happens and someone is with her, they could force her to answer the phone and pretend everything is okay. We do other things aside from phone calls for added reassurance." Ryan stares at me a moment after I hit send on the text. I know he thinks I'm being overly paranoid right now, but surely he can't blame me. Asa is fucking psychotic and unpredictable. I'm not sure anyone could ever be too safe when it comes to him. "That's actually pretty genius," Ryan says. "I know," I say, getting ready to dial Sloane's number. "It was her idea, and so far she's never missed a single day. She sets the trash out like clockwork." I bring the phone to my ear and wait while it rings. She's never not answered her phone. I wait. She doesn't answer her phone. Right when it goes to voicemail, I get a text from the surveillance guy. "Thomas, still waiting. Trash hasn't been taken out yet." My fucking heart falls straight to the floor. Ryan sees it. He stands up at the same time I do. "I'll call for backup," he says, tossing money onto the table. I'm out the door before I can respond. I'm in my car. I'm cussing traffic and honking my horn and doing everything I can to get there. 4 minutes. 4 fucking excruciating minutes. That's how long it's going to take me to get there. I dial a number and hit call on my phone. Yeah, he says. Did you put the trash out yet? I'm trying to remain calm, but I can't. Not yet, man. I beat my fist on the steering wheel. Did anyone go through the front door today? I'm yelling my words no matter how hard I try to remain calm. No, not since you left this morning. Go around back, I yell. Check the windows. He doesn't say anything. Now, check the windows while I'm on the phone with you. He clears his throat. You hired me for surveillance. I don't even have a gun, man. No way I'm going back there if it's got you this worried. I grip the phone tighter in my hand and scream at him. Are you fucking kidding me? The line goes dead. Fucking son of a bitch. I slam on the gas and power through a red light. I'm 2 blocks away now. I'm almost through the intersection when it happens. My entire body jerks with the impact. I saw the 18-wheeler out of the corner of my eye, and then I didn't. My airbag deploys. My car begins spinning. I know it's all happening faster than anyone witnessing it can possibly even comprehend, but the crash goes in slow motion for me. It drags on and fucking on. By the time my car comes to a stop, the blood is already rushing into my eye. I hear horns and people yelling. I reach down for my seatbelt, but I can't move my right arm. It's broken. I get my seatbelt unbuckled with my left arm. I press my shoulder into the driver's side door and push it open. I wipe the blood off my forehead. Sir, a man yells from behind me. Sir, you need to stay in the car. Someone grabs my shoulder and tries to stop me. Get off me, I yell. I try to regain my bearings long enough to see which direction I'm facing. I catch sight of the convenience store on my right. I turn left and I push through the crowd beginning to form around my car. People are yelling at me to stop running, but I can't run fast enough. 2 blocks. I can do that in less than a minute. The entire time I'm sprinting toward my apartment, I make excuses for why she's not answering the phone. I pray I'm wrong, that I'm overreacting, but I know Sloane. Something is wrong. She wouldn't not answer her phone. She wouldn't not take the trash out right at 12. Something is wrong. When I finally reach the complex, I'm not in a vehicle, so the sensor on the fucking gate doesn't open for me. I look around for a door to walk through, but it's locked. I back up several feet and then sprint for the gate, somehow pulling myself over with my good arm. I don't land on my feet. I land on my right fucking shoulder, and the pain shoots through me like a bolt of lightning. It knocks the breath out of me. I'm forced to take a second until I can take in air again. Then I'm back on my feet. I see Thomas, the surveillance guy. He's standing outside of his car. When he sees me, his eyes widen at the sight of me, and then he throws his hands up. I'm sorry, man. I was about to go check on her. He backs up, and I can't help myself. I punch him right in the throat with my good hand. I keep walking as he falls against his car door. Stupid fuck, I yell over my shoulder. I sprint toward the apartment and go straight past the front door, around the side of the building to the wall our living room and bedroom windows line. I run up to the living room window, and it takes all I have not to scream out her name when I see the lock on the inside of the window. It's unlatched. I know instantly how it happened. The maintenance guy. It's my own fucking fault. I should have been a step ahead of Asa. I don't give myself time to think over it. I press my back against the wall next to the window and I try to listen. I reach down to my side and I pull out my gun. I close my eyes and inhale. I hear voices. I hear Sloane's voice. I want to cry a river knowing I'm not too late, but I'll do that later. Right now, I inch over toward the window and try to peek inside. I can barely see anything because of the curtains. Fuck. My pulse is pounding. I can hear sirens in the distance, and I have no idea if they're coming here because Ryan called them or if they're going to the wreck I just caused at the intersection. Either way, if I don't do something in the next 5 seconds, whoever is inside this apartment will hear them, and they'll be forced to take action. I drop to my knees and hold the gun on my left hand while I inch the window open with my right. I peek inside, and I can see Sloane. I can also see someone else. His back is to the window. He laughs. He fucking laughs, and I know instantly that it's him. He's in there with Sloane. He hasn't hurt her yet. She's standing in the kitchen. If he hears the sirens, he will hurt her. He'll panic and he'll do something stupid. I don't know how she has him this calm, but it doesn't surprise me. Sloane is smart as fuck. I raise the window another inch. For half a second, Sloane makes eye contact with me. Half a second. A glance. She drops her fork, and I know she does it on purpose. The second she does it, she says, "Shit." She bends over to pick it up. I raise the window a little higher as Asa is scooting back in the bar stool. He's walking around the bar for whatever reason, to make sure she's not trying something. I lift my gun, barely able to grip the trigger with my right hand. He takes the fork from her and tosses it in the sink and then hands her a new one. Right after she grabs it, she falls to the floor and screams, "Now!" Before Asa can even comprehend what's happening, I pull the trigger. I don't even wait to see where it hits him. I push the window up and climb inside, running across our living room until I get to her. She's crawling around the bar toward me. "Again!" she yells in desperation. "Shoot him again!" Asa is lying on the floor with his hand against his neck. Blood is rushing through his fingers, spilling down his arm. His chest is heaving up and down as he struggles to drag in breath. I aim the gun at him. His eyes are wide and he glances around looking for Sloane. She's standing behind me now, gripping the back of my shirt in fear. His eyes land on her.
"Fucking whore," he manages to mutter. "I lied. I hate your fucking lasagna."
I pull the trigger. Sloane screams and buries her face against my back. I turn around and pull her against me. She's crying, holding on to me with all the strength she has. I can't stand up anymore. I grip the bar and lower us both to the floor. I pull her onto my lap and she curls up against me. I try to ignore the pain in my arm as I hold her. I press my face into her hair and I breathe her in. "Are you okay?" She's sobbing, but she manages to nod. "Are you hurt?" I'm trying to inspect her, but she looks okay. I put my hand on her stomach and I close my eyes and exhale. "I'm so sorry, Sloane. I'm so sorry. I feel like I failed her. I did everything I could to protect her and he somehow still got to her." She wraps her arms tightly around my neck and I can feel her shaking her head. "Thank you." She's holding me as tight as she possibly can. "Thank you, thank you, thank you, Luke." The sirens are directly outside now. Someone is beating on the door. Ryan climbs through the window and assesses the situation, then walks to the front door and unlocks it. Several uniformed officers file in, yelling orders at each other. One of them tries to address Sloane and me, but Ryan pushes him aside. "Give them a minute, goddamn!" They do. They give us several. I hold her until the medics come inside. I hold her while they check Asa's pulse. I'm still holding her when one of them announces his time of death. I'm still holding her when Ryan slides to the floor next to us. "I saw your car," he says, referring to the wreck. "You okay?" I nod. "Did anyone get hurt?" He shakes his head. "Just you, it looks like." Sloane pulls back and looks at me closely for the first time, noticing my injuries from the wreck.
"Oh my God, Luke."
She presses her palm against my head.
"He's hurt, someone help him."
She crawls off my lap and a medic rushes over. He looks at my head for a brief second. "We need to get you to the hospital." Ryan helps the medic lift me up off the floor. I grab Sloane's hand as I'm passing her and she holds it with both of hers. She's in front of me now, walking backward as she looks at me, frantic.
"Are you okay? What happened?"
I wink at her. "Just a little fender bender. You can't drown in Fred water if the cruise ship is full of salmon tacos." Sloane smiles and squeezes my hand. Ryan groans and looks at one of the medics. "You need to check him for a concussion. He did this last time he was injured, just started saying random stuff that didn't make any sense." They put me in the back of the ambulance, but I'm still holding Sloane's hand, so she climbs in and sits next to me. I see worry in her eyes, but I also see a sense of relief that has never been present in her. I squeeze her hand. "It's over, Sloane. He can't hurt you anymore." Epilogue. It's been 7 months since Asa died, but Sloane still doesn't talk about what happened with him in the last hours she was trapped in that apartment with him. As much as I hope she can open up and tell me about it one day, I don't push her. I know what Asa was capable of, and I don't even like to think about what she might have had to endure. She's been going to therapy, and it really does seem to help, so that's all I can ask of her. I just want her to continue to do what she can to help herself move past the situation at whatever pace she needs to do it. The day I was released from the hospital, there was a funeral planned for Asa. Sloane and I were at the apartment that morning packing a few belongings when Ryan called to let me know about it. I relayed the information to her, but knew that she wouldn't want to attend his funeral after all he'd put her through. Later that morning, Sloane told me she wanted to go to the funeral. Naturally, I tried to talk her out of it. I was even a little upset that she would want to subject herself to that, but I had to remind myself that she knew him better than anyone. Even though she was terrified of him, she was one of the few people who meant something to him, as fucked up as he was in showing it. When we arrived, we were the only two who came. I tried to imagine what that must have been like for him, to have no family at all, and the friends you did have weren't even real friends. He didn't even have anyone to set up funeral arrangements, so it was a minimal burial. There was no one else there from Ace's past. Just a preacher from the funeral home, me, Sloane, and another employee from the funeral home. I'm not even sure a prayer would have been said had we not attended. I don't want to say that helped me to understand him better because he was the reason no one showed up to his funeral, though I did feel sorry for him more in that moment than I ever had. But he harmed everyone in his path throughout his life, and you can't really blame anyone but Asa for that. Sloane didn't cry during the funeral. It was just a graveside burial that lasted about 10 minutes. The preacher relayed a quick sermon and said a prayer, then asked if either of us wanted to say anything. I shook my head because I was honestly only there for Sloane's benefit, but Sloane nodded. She stood next to me, her hand in mine, and she looked down at the casket. She exhaled a careful breath before speaking.
Asa, she said, you had a lot of potential, but you spent every day of your life expecting the world to repay you for a few really shitty years you were dealt as a child. That's where you went wrong. The world doesn't owe us a thing. We take what we're given and we make the most of it. But you took what you were given and you shit on it and then expected more.
There were no flowers, so she bent down and picked up a dandelion, placing it on top of his casket. And then in a quiet whisper, she said,
every child deserves love, Asa. I'm sorry you were never loved. For that, I forgive you. We both do.
She stayed quiet for several minutes. I'm not sure if she was saying a prayer for him or if she was silently saying goodbye, but I waited patiently until she was ready. She grabbed my hand, then turned and walked away with me at her side. In that moment, I was happy we decided to attend. I think she needed to be there more than I knew. Since that day 7 months ago, I've thought about that moment a lot. I thought I understood what she was saying at Ace's funeral, but right now, standing over my son's crib and looking down on him as he sleeps peacefully, I think it just hit me what she was saying when she said, I forgive you. We both do. At the time, I thought she was referring to the two of us, her and me, that both of us forgave Asa for all he had put us through. But I'm not so sure she was referring to me now that I look back on it. She was referring to our son. When she said we, she meant herself and our son. She was telling Asa that they forgive him because even though she was only a few months pregnant at that point, I think she's known all along that Asa is most likely our son's biological father. I believe that's the reason she needed to go to the funeral. She didn't need closure for herself. She needed closure for the child that Asa would never know. We've only spoken once about the fact that our son, Dalton, may not biologically be mine. It was 2 weeks after he was born. Sloane had purchased a paternity test because she feared that it was bothering me not knowing if Dalton was mine or Asa's. Sloane was afraid that not knowing for certain if I was the father was going to eat at me, and she didn't want to be what stood between me and the truth. That paternity test has been sitting in our bathroom cabinet since that day. I haven't opened it yet. She hasn't asked about it. And right now, staring down at my little boy while he sleeps, I feel like I already know the answer. It doesn't matter who fathered this baby because Sloane is this baby's mother. There was a moment once, the first time Asa introduced me to Sloane, she was standing in her kitchen, swaying back and forth, washing dishes. She thought she was alone and it was absolutely mesmerizing. There was this peacefulness on her face that I'd soon come to know was very rare. I see that same peacefulness in Dalton when he sleeps. He looks like her, same hair and eyes, and he has her spirit. That's all that matters to me. I wish she believed that. I wish she knew that whether those test results would prove that this baby is biologically a part of me or a part of Asa, it changes nothing. I don't love this child like I do because I have a biological responsibility to love him. I love this child because I'm human and I can't help it. I love him because Sloane helped create him. I love him because I'm his dad. I reach into the crib and I run my hand over the top of his head. What are you doing? I turn around and Sloane is leaning against the doorway to the nursery. Her head is resting against the frame of the door and she's smiling at me. I pull Dalton's blanket up a little higher and then I turn around and walk towards Sloane. I grab her hand and pull the door to the nursery halfway shut. Sloane intertwines her fingers in mine and follows me as I make my way through our bedroom and into the bathroom. She's still behind me, gripping my hand, when I open the cabinet and take out the paternity test. When I face her, I can see a quiet fear in her eyes. I kiss her to wipe her fear away, and then I take the paternity test, still in its packaging, and I throw it in the trash can. There are tears in her eyes, and as hard as she's trying to hide it, there's a smile tugging at the corners of her mouth. I wrap my arms around her, and for several seconds, we just silently stare at each other. She's looking up at me, and I'm staring down at her, and in this moment, we both know everything we need to know. It doesn't matter how the members of my family came to be. What matters is that this is my family. We're a family. Me and her and our son.
This has been an Audible Studios production of Too Late, Definitive Edition. Written by Colleen Hoover. Performed by Ryan Gray, Maxine Mitchell, and Joe Arden. Executive Producer, Jeff Golick. Producer, Kat Lambrix. Head of Production at Audible Studios, Mike Charzik. Copyright 2023 by Colleen Hoover. Sound recording copyright 2023 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.